Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome, one and all, to Knife Talk, the number one knife podcast, basically. Anything to do with knives, we cover it. It's me, myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts, and normally we have Jeff Vader with us. But he's had a bit of an incident. He undercooked his turkey this year. So there's no polite way to say this, but he's probably on the loo
He's been shitting his pants for the last 5 days.
You've probably had the same messages as me, Mareko, for the last 2 days.
Well, and the pictures and the videos are the worst. Yeah, it's disgusting.
Not good. So if ever he offers you food, please say no, because...
Be very careful.
Be very, very careful. So we're going to do things slightly different this week. It's just myself and Mareko. Things have been a little bit strange over the last few weeks where, you know, we haven't had the three of us haven't been in a show for some time. Last week we did the Dharma Steel Chef Invitational. So that was a slightly different show as well. That was lots and lots of fun for those who listened to that one live. And I just think it'd be just nice to have a chat. It's, you know, it's Thanksgiving weekend. Christmas is coming. Lots going on. I thought maybe we just have a chat. What do you think?
That sounds great to me.
Yeah, a bit more civilized and relaxed.
Yeah.
Rather than that guy showing up, calling everybody motherfuckers. You know how it is.
That guy. That motherfucker.
So, I mean, how has your Thanksgiving been?
Thanksgiving was great. My wife's side of the family is here in Washington, and... they're mostly down about an hour south of us, so not very far. And her uncle is a very talented cook, and so he always does the main like protein, which is the turkey or a ham. Sometimes he does lamb. So he does the meat and then a couple sides, or at least the pies, again, because he's very talented. And then he asked for people to help with like other sides. We brought a salad, a very simple arugula and fennel root salad with like a lemon vinaigrette and a pecorino. Kind of cheese, kind of tossed all together. It's very nice, very simple, light, because everything has a tendency to be very heavy on Thanksgiving Day. So the salad is really kind of a nice little reprieve from all the heavy. Exactly. Well, and it's just brighter. Vinaigrette's always a little bit brighter than everything else.
Yeah. You know, it's mad how, you know, it's obviously such a big thing for you guys, Thanksgiving.
Right.
And of all the holidays that have come over the seas, you know, like Halloween, when I was a kid, it was a little thing. It was never really massive.
Sure.
But, you know, you'd see it in the States and it was huge. And now that is over here as well. And, you know, all the holidays now have just gone so much bigger.
Right.
Following that sort of American influence. But, you know, Thanksgiving, we've never really, you know, it's something that nobody celebrates here at all. It's a normal day.
It's kind of a fake holiday. Really.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
What we're really good, I feel like, in the United States, what we're really good at is taking something that is virtually meaningless and turning it into a big thing and then selling a bunch of shit around it. And it's all about business. It's all about money.
Yeah.
But it is nice to have somewhat of a dedicated day once a year to get together and intentionally spend time with people, ideally and hopefully, that you get along with and that you care about. Sometimes that's definitely not the case.
Forced families together.
Yeah, exactly. You got your weird uncle in the back getting drunk and trying to get everybody to pull his finger. I don't know. It's interesting, but it was cool. It was her side of the family is all very, they're very kind people. They're great to hang out with, and the food's good. And so it's always good to see them. It's kind of our once a year opportunity to go spend some time with them, even though they're only an hour away. We hardly ever see them. But her great grand or her, what was it? Yeah. Her grandparents are still rocking and rolling. They're in their early 90s. And as much as we can, we do actually get down there at least to spend, to see them every couple months, once you get beyond 70 or 80, it's like any day it could just happen.
Yeah, everything's a bonus.
Exactly. So, they're really great people. And so it's fun to spend time with them.
Nice. So how many were there for dinner?
Oh gosh, there was probably 25 people.
Wowzers.
Not a super big house either, so there's a lot of people crammed into a kind of a tight space, but again, they make it happen. They're very gracious hosts. They've been doing it for years, and I think they're ready to pass on the torch, but unfortunately nobody's really kind of picked it up.
I suppose those are, you know, for the kids, I suppose that's the memories that you have, isn't it? You know, I remember, you know, as being a kid and, you know, big family get-togethers and that kind of thing, which don't happen so much now. Certainly not in my family. We're a bit more sort of dispersed all over the place.
Right.
But as a kid, you always remember whether it was Christmas or Boxing Day, everybody would always be together. Too many people in one room, it would be too hot. People would be drinking too much. And they were always good memories.
Yeah. No, it's super. I remember, from when I was a kid, and we had, what is it? We had one part of the family that we'd get together with, and there was 5 or 6 kids running around, rampaging around the house, chasing each other, playing games, breaking each other's presents and toys and shit. It was a good time hanging out, and it is good to have those times and those memories, because my kid is going to be an only child. My wife and I have had the conversation about whether or not we're going to keep going and getting more and bringing more in the world. We might maybe somewhere down the road adopt, we're good with where we're at. So it's good for him to have those times and those moments with the other extended family, because he's kind of, you know, because he's in, and it's not like he doesn't have friends. He has friends he sees and plays with all the time, goes to school with, but it's not necessarily the same as having siblings. And so cousins have a tendency to be kind of surrogate siblings to him, and he loves spending time with them. So
how old is he now?
He's 7. He'll be 8 in August next year.
It's their birthday next week, and they're 5, twins.
Okay.
And then we've got Buddy, who's 20 months now. Wow. And so we were just discussing actually today that next year the twins go up to the next school, which is the next village.
Okay.
And Buddy starts school. And it's like, he'll be 2.5 and he starts school. And I remember when the twins started, that feeling of, you know, dropping a baby off at the gates for 9 till 4:30, a full day.
Right.
And we're like, geez. But the difference is he's grown up, obviously, with slightly older siblings. So he's much more sort of socially advanced than they were, because, you know, they went through lockdown, then they went straight into school, and again, in a different country, whereas this is all he's known, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just mad to think how quick everything happens.
Yeah, there was, when my kid was, I think either when my wife was still pregnant with a kid or right after he was born, I read a book called Raising Bebe, and it was about an American expat over in France. I think she lived in Paris, but and her talking about the cultural differences of how France raises their kids and how they start them super early, and they do like full day, like super early.
Oh yeah.
And they keep them like super regimented on like breakfast, lunch, and dinner kind of. It sounds
discipline
like.
is a huge thing over here.
Yeah, and discipline and like, yeah, kids are meant to be seen but not to be heard kind of situation. Yeah,
there is another famous book, actually. It's something like, you know, French kids aren't naughty. It's something like, it's called something like that. I can't think of what it's called. But basically, that's the gist of it, that French kids aren't naughty. And it really is the case. I could be walking down the street. If I go into one of the towns here, I could be walking down the street and there could be a bunch of like teens, 13, 14-year-olds. And, you know, there's 9 or 10 of them. And anywhere else, if I was back in Wales or if I was in London or wherever, you're not nervous, but you're expecting them to some sort of remark or something to happen, you know, as kids are. But here in France, you know, they all step aside and say, bonjour, monsieur, it's just it's mad that, the kids here, they got a real respect for adults.
Do they though? I bet that they're polite to your face, but the second you pass, they're like, fucking cunt.
Quite possibly, yeah. Yeah, roast beef, quite possibly. But like the schooling system here is very traditional. You know, it's all very sort of grammar and stuff. They have no creative lessons at all, nothing at all. So there's no like music or drama. They don't do that. Do that at all. But they have Wednesdays off. So the Wednesdays are then supposed to be association days. So that's when you're meant to put them in classes, you know, for whether it's music classes, dance or whatever.
Interesting.
They don't do it in school at all. I mean, most kids are then just playing video games all day on a Wednesday, you know.
Right.
you know, thankfully for us, it's slightly different because, you know, we both work from home anyway. But yeah, it is a completely different system. And starting at 2:30, dropped off, and the teachers are very sort of strict, you know, no parents coming in because that'll just make things worse. Drop them off and I'll see you at 4:30. And it's just like, wow. So they have a sleeping room there, so they have a 3-course lunch which lasts 2 hours.
Oh my god, are you serious?
Every day, the twins every day, it's like, what should you have? And they have duck and they have all this. Like the menus every day are incredible.
My kid would love that. He's part French because he's the slowest fucking eater I've ever met in my life. Like growing up for me, food was such a like I don't know, we just didn't have a lot of it, so it's like you ate what you had as quickly as you possibly could so you could get seconds. But he's, you know, like I said, he's an only kid, and I like to cook, so he's got plenty of whatever he wants, and he's just diddling dolls and takes his whole it takes like an hour to eat a lunch, and I'm like, what the fuck, bro? Like literally just like, and he talks so much though too, that's part of it too, he's constantly telling stories and asking questions, which is cool, but it really slows down the process where I'm like, all right, we could have been done like 10 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. It's bedtime.
We got other shit to do. Let's move on.
Yeah. But yeah, it's very much like that, the schools here. And as I said, they have a sleeping room then. So after a 2-hour lunch, they'll then go for a sleep. It's completely different to, you know, the school I was in. But yeah, the fact that, you know, Buddy's going to be doing that next year as well, it's just mad. But that does give me my time back.
I was going to say, I can get back in the shop, having some of that back, right?
Yeah. And I've got to be honest with you, even doing this show, I felt like a fraud for the last 18 months at least, because I'm barely in the workshop. Barely. I mean, I can tell you now, the last time I turned on my grinder was 3-4 weeks ago. So I can't wait for a bit of normality to come back.
I got you.
There's no more babies, without a doubt.
Did you get snipped? You got powerful swimmers, bud.
It's a delicate situation that haven't. But Well, I mean, the thing is, our kids were IVF babies anyway.
Oh, okay.
So my thinking is, well, I don't particularly need to. And then she's like, I think you need just in case. So it's going back and forth, this thing anyway. But at the moment, I'm fully intact.
Okay.
Yeah.
They don't take your whole unit off. It's just, there's just a small incision.
From what I understand. I have had a look at a video, and even that.
Oh, really?
They say like people go back to work the same day, and I'm like, what? No. Oh, no. No. I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, I think we should talk about our sponsors. First up,
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
go and do it. I mean, Even Heat have been with us since day one. Great sponsors, and everybody we speak to, everybody has an Even Heat. And for all those people, you know, you always get very similar questions each week of, you know, what do I need to spend money on if I'm just starting out? I mean, a kiln is basically one of the basics. And if you're going to get one, get the best, get yourself an Even Heat. Okay, so what should we do? What should we do? We haven't got Jeff telling us what to do this week. We can do what the hell we like.
We do whatever we want. Like.
What are you working on at the moment?
What am I working on? I'm working on a knife. Imagine that, made out of Damascus. I know, shocker, right? Just doing kind of basic stuff. I did that fundraising knife for the school, and recently I've really struggled with my packaging game. I feel like it's not as good as it really ought to be or could be. And I've had this idea of building a box in my mind for a long time. And so with this little bench knife, it's just a brute forge bench knife, no handle or anything, I kind of played with that concept where I did kind of like I would do a three-piece saya, but instead of having both sides glued on, I only had one side glued on, and then the other side got a hinge, so open and close. But the inside of the box was still, I cut out the negative space where the knife would go. So there's a cavity there that fits the knife perfectly. And it's got a couple, down by at the tip end of the tang, it's got a couple spots where you can kind of fit your fingers in and pull the knife out of the box. And then I actually had a shim underneath to kind of help balance it out and raise it up so that it kind of fit in there nicely and was presented nicely. It was a quick and dirty one, and part of it is because it was going to my friend won that knife, and so it was I felt safe kind of experimenting with that concept with him, because he could either trash it or keep it, whatever, and not be too annoyed with it or whatever, you know, disappointed, I guess. And I like it. I have a different idea, though, about how to use the lid, or I guess hinge the lid so that it can double as kind of a stand for the knife, so that it can be a packaging, like a packaging box, but then can be used as a way to display the knife. Because sometimes people don't necessarily use my knives, which is totally fine with me. I mean, they're designed and built to be used, but ultimately, when somebody buys it, they get to do whatever the hell they want with it. And so some of them just like to display it or have it on the kitchen counter or on a whatever, a curiosity shelf or bookshelf or something. And it's something to talk to people about. So
I suppose packaging-wise with you, it's different because every knife you do is slightly different. So you can't order a package in it. Yeah, you can't order a package in it knowing that, you know, what it's going to rattle around, or it's not going to be perfectly fitting each time.
Right.
Yes, yeah, challenge.
And that's kind of like that has always been the challenge, is because there aren't really standard lengths and heights and widths and all that kind of stuff. Even the handle shape and size of the handle, none of that's standardized. It varies from knife to knife. And so, but I built this little box in a day, and I didn't spend the whole day on it. You know, there were times where it was gluing or like some finishes were drying, but it just took a day to put together. And I feel like if I were to build a sheath for it, like a saya, usually my sayas take longer than that for sure. Which is kind of a drag because it's such a simple thing, but I have a problem with it on my knives being too simple. I want like the leather liner on the inside to help be a little bit kinder to the surface of the blade and stuff like that. And so it ends up taking me like 2 or 3 days to build one of those stupid things rather than just one day. I want something quick and dirty, or kind of quick and dirty, but
So when you do a saya, are you sort of routing out the blade shape on one piece and then sandwiching it with just a flat piece, or you routing out both pieces?
Right. All of those are valid ways of making a saya. Or when I first was making sayas, I would have one flat side, or say the piece was maybe 3/4 of an inch. I would cut off a 1/4 inch slab off one side, and then I would keep the other side thick, and then I would route it out, and then I would kind of size it down using a sander. not a 2x72, but probably like a 4-inch wide or something like that, at least, just so I could rest the whole width of the Saya on there. And I would sand it down to fit. And then, and so I would basically route out a pocket where the knife would go. Yeah. And then I would glue the pieces to two pieces back together. And then I would, you know, contour it on the outside and clean it up on the outside, going as however I liked. And then, but that is also very time consuming. And doing a 3-piece Saya, which is essentially like doing leather, is you have that same board, and maybe it's like a, it would probably have to be more like a either 7/8 or a 1-inch thick board, and you split that into three even pieces. And so the outer two pieces become the outer faces of the Saya.
So they're flat sides, they're and you've got the like a frame, like a rocket.
Yeah. Yeah, and then on the inside, on the middle piece, the core piece, I just trace the shape of the blade, and then I cut it out with a bandsaw. And literally, so like the bare bones, simple side, you just glue that all back together. And you probably want to do a little bit of sanding, you know, to clean up the socks, scratches and stuff like that from the saw blade. But you glue them back together, and boom, you have a Saya. Now, I take it to another level where
you surprised me, Morocco.
I sculpt the welt down, or the core piece down, to kind of fit the size of the blade better. I do a leather liner on the inside. I also make a retention pin, and then after all that, I do sculpt the outside to be really clean and have these nice facets and stuff like that. And and then I send it out. But again, it takes 2 or 3 days at least.
Yeah.
If I'm not too overly distracted.
With a retention pin, you'll have the Saya coming further back on the heel, so there's just a bit of room there.
Right. Yeah. I like to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. My retention pin is usually an 1/8 inch. What is it? 1/8 inch pin. Yeah. I don't know what to call it. Pin stock. What I actually use is I use bronze. I get brazing wire from like the welding supply store. That's an 1/8 of an inch. And it's super cheap, and you can get tons of that material, and you can use it in handles, you can use it in sayas, I use it for just my sayas, and so I use that, and I drill a little, I make a little head for the pin with usually a piece of material that matches the handle of the knife, and then I chuck it into a Dremel. And then I use a second Dremel or a Fordham or some sort of rotary tool to sculpt it and shape it. I used, when I first started doing it, I would actually chuck it into my drill press and then use my Dremel to sculpt it into like a somewhat interesting shape, and then sand it in there as well, and then take it out. And that would be my retention pin.
And now you're double Dremeling. You massacre.
Yeah. Dremel on Dremel. Don't cross streams.
Hard Dremel action. Yeah.
It's a hardcore.
Okay. Well, you know, you could just do it with sandpaper. And if you did, you'd probably want to use the world's best sandpaper.
Absolutely.
Which is Rhino-Wet. If you are doing any sort of hand sanding, I know Marek uses Rhino-Wet, Jeff uses it, I use it. Most of our listeners are now using it because it just saves you time. It's great, great stuff. You can get that from Texas Farrow Supply. They've got that in all the possible grits you want. But they also do lots of other stuff, obviously. If you're a knife maker, a farrier, whatever you want to call yourself, head on over to texasfarrowsupply.com and you get 10% off by using Knife Talk 10 in the checkout. So go take a look. Fill up the basket with lots of Rhino-Wet. It's going to save you money, and we can save you more money by using Knife Talk 10 as a promo code.
You know, a lot of people credit Nick Wheeler for getting into the whole Rhino-Wet. But Nick Wheeler actually credits Bert Foster, who's a knife maker. Oh, shit. I don't know where Bert's out of. Bristol, South Carolina, or Bristol, Tennessee. Anyways, somewhere in the South.
Yeah, because I think Rhino-Wet is initially for like car finishes, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, for people
for auto body. Right. Robot.
Yeah.
And Bert Foster turned Nick Wheeler onto it. And then Nick Wheeler made all these great videos about his process for making knives. And he uses the Rhino-Wet in there. And so people start, because they love all the other instruction that Nick was offering, they're like, well, why wouldn't I use the same sandpaper? And they found that they really liked it as well. But Nick gets credit for it. And Nick's a great guy. And he'll be the first also to say that it was Bert Foster that turned him on to that. But It's always it's interesting to learn where that stuff comes from.
But something that's become such a like a common thing for everybody to be using now, almost like a standard tool. How did that happen? How did somebody start using this?
Right. Well, it's like even like the coffee stuff or like all kinds of different things that S grinds and all that weird stuff that people do now. It's like people joining, they're like, okay, this is the way to do it, and they figure it out, but not knowing where that even started. It's fine.
Yeah. That's such a great thing about doing a podcast like this because, you know, most of the content that we do is just user generated now anyway. Right. You know, we had a few years where, you know, we were having to put a bit more work in, but now it's, we seem to put stuff out there and we get 10 times as much stuff back. And, you know, so yeah, we're always getting tips like that and stuff now that, that we're learning. And it's mad to know that there's this whole sort of community out there that they're not doing everything in the same way, but they're all taking tips from each other and all that kind of thing. And I suppose before podcasts, that was forums, which, you know, they've taken a bit of a nosedive. People, you know, don't use forums as much these days.
I mean, Instagram's somewhat similar to forums, though.
True. Yeah, quite true, actually.
It's
just a
different platform, slightly different user interface, but very similar.
Yeah.
Especially when people would do, like, if you ever went through the forums, like the whip builds or something, like the build alongs or whips or the work in project posts.
Yeah.
It would be essentially, they would post pictures and caption it, and then people would comment, and then they would answer questions and go back and forth, and then they'd show the next picture. And so Instagram has kind of the mod, somebody, who was it? Josh Smith, when he was first starting Instagram, he's like, dude, I don't know how to use this shit at all. It's so weird. And I'm like, dude, just pretend it's the forums and do the same shit you do on the forums, but do it on Instagram. And he's like, oh. And then he started doing it, and he's just totally ran with it. He's done great.
If it weren't for Instagram, this podcast, I'm pretty sure, would no longer be a thing, you know? Just because then it was somewhere for that sort of community to then, you know, follow each other, see each other's work, and make it more of a visual thing, whereas obviously this is an audio thing. People can put those two things together, and, you know, when we're talking about a maker, they can look at their stuff, and it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Well, if you think about, like, God, I can't remember what... how people refer to it. like traditional radio, like there weren't any places for like meetups or anything. People just showed up and listened to the program when it came on the radio at whatever time, you know. And this is obviously back in what, like the 20s to 60s or whatever. People were listening to the radio a lot more religiously, and so all this community building around shows is so new. It's really interesting and cool. I mean, it's great because, yeah, like you were saying, these people not only get to know the people who own, or not own the show, but are part of the podcast and hosting the podcast and sometimes get to interact through, you know, they would do live calls, but we do the Q&A or the questions and stuff like that. But they also get to interact with each other and get to know each other. And that's, I feel like that is a really cool aspect of, social media in regards to content creation platform or content creators, like what we're doing, is that we also get to build a community of people around the work we're doing to try to help each other and help the community and them help each other.
Yeah. And that's always the thing that strikes me, that we got all these people and effectively like individual businesses, really.
Yeah.
Because most people now are, you know, solitary makers, or they may have, you know, two or three small teams of people. They're not big businesses, obviously. But the fact that everybody then shares their knowledge, and, you know, I've said this a million times, you'd never get, you know, plumbers all getting together and saying, oh, what you want is buy one of these wrenches, they're far better. You know, like, you know, they keep their, you know, their tips of the trade to themselves.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, we don't see that really, you know, in this community.
Yeah. I mean, it's curious to try to think about. I mean, I think from my own personal perspective, I'm constantly seeking approval from people. And so I feel like some of the reason and way or kind of the background of why I share as some of the stuff that I share, or really any of the stuff that I share, is I want the little like pat on the back or like the shout out. And you're like, oh, I saw this on Mirako Malmasi's post, or I talked to him at Blade Show, and he gave me some great advice or this tip, and it's really helped me, and blah, 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 blah. Right. And so And that is a really, like, honestly, as somebody who grew up not necessarily getting kind of, like, I was constantly, I excelled at a lot of things, but at home, and I love my mom, and she had a busy house, and there were only three of us, but she was a single mom working full-time job with three kids, trying to do her best. And so, you know, she probably didn't have time to stop and give us the praise that we wanted or needed necessarily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so now, you know, social media has kind of created that opportunity to find that within a community. But at the same time, there obviously there are some downfalls with it. And like, how much does it really mean when it's coming from people we don't really know or have no connection with? And then, I don't know, I'm starting to get into like therapy shit. But it's like, is it more important than what I think about myself? I don't think so. I need, and how am I figuring out how to do both? To kind of have approval from myself as well as accepting the thanks and approval from people outside of me.
Yeah, and there's got to be, so, you know, there's validation that you'll get from others seeing your work and commenting on all that kind of thing. But I think certainly at your level, people then, any validation that they give you shines back on them. Because, I mean, if you interact with them, they're like, well, hey, mom, Maraka Mamasi, look at my work and all that kind of thing.
Oh,
so it sort of, it all sort of feeds into itself, you know?
That's so funny. I never thought about it from that way.
Oh, of course,
Yeah. But I guess I feel like if I comment on a chef's thing and they happen to say, like, comment back, like, thanks, even just thanks, I'm like, whoa!
It's a recognition, isn't it? It's just like, you know, they saw me, they heard me. And
Feeling seen for, even if it's like, you know, half a second, can feel good. For sure.
And I can guarantee if you went to a stranger's, you know, maybe one of our listeners who you don't normally interact with, if you liked one of their posts, they'd be telling all their mates. They'd be like, look at this. And they'd be taking screenshots and all that kind of thing.
Oh, funny.
It's mad. Yeah. There's like so many different levels, isn't it? It's like to every sort of game. It is crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. Right. You know who's top of the tree when it comes to levels?
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
15% off. That can be a hell of a saving. If you're making, you know, $300-$400 order each time, you can save a lot. So head on over to combatabrasives.com. Okay, you just mentioned then growing up with your siblings. What's the difference in age with you and your siblings? Oh,
I'm the oldest, and my brother is 14 months younger than me, and my sister is 13 months younger than him. So we're almost...
all pretty close.
Yeah, we're almost Irish triplets. Almost.
Yeah.
Not quite.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking, when you said, you know, sort of vying for attention, and if you're all the same age, because, I mean, my kids at the moment, the twins, the girls,
Christ, yeah.
They're four. Completely opposite. Their personalities are completely opposite. So Daisy's always just away with the fairies. She's a real dreamer.
That's great.
and Molly is always seeking our attention. Mm-hmm. She pretends she's the louder one, and she pretends that, but really, you know, you can see she's a bit more insecure, I suppose.
Sure.
But just this last week, we've really noticed that. Anytime Daisy does something, Molly will be straight over and say, look what I've done, look what I've done. And it's just like, it's so obvious every time. Because, you know, being four, she doesn't realize that we know what's going on, you know?
Right.
And it's just like, oh, man, it's just so tiresome, so tiresome.
Yeah, and it's interesting how even twins, like you got, you know, they it seems like they should be basically the same, but they can be so, like, completely
so different.
And have completely different needs. My wife's sister has twins, and they're basically the same way. One's away with the fairies, and the other one's just like right there on mom's hip nonstop.
Crazy. Because, I mean, with me, I was basically the baby of the family until 16. When I was 16, my parents then had another baby.
Whoa.
So I've got a sister who's 5 years older than me.
Okay.
A brother who's 2 years older than me. Then there was me, and I was the little baby of the house until I was 16, and then my parents had another baby. So that was like completely different. And he's had his upbringing is so different to ours, because there's three of us, busy house, all crazy all the time. And by the time he came along, I mean, my older brother and sister had moved out. Mm-hmm. I was 16. I wasn't really in the house much at 16, you know. And obviously times had changed by then as well. Me growing up in the 80s and 90s, kids, you know, coming through the 2000s and onwards didn't really have the same freedoms that we had back then.
Yeah.
So I'm always just wondering, you know, my kids, you know, their upbringing, how different it is to ours, and what that means going forward. And it's just, I don't know, it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Yeah.
We'd never let them out on their bikes down the street or anything like that, you know, which is something that was just so part and parcel growing up for us.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm a few years younger than you, but even I was able to...
Just a couple. Should we say just a couple?
A couple. What? You're 42, right?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah.
My podcast age is far younger.
I used to be able to, you know, in elementary school, jump on the bike and ride like miles away from my house. But I think, you know, it did take a little bit of trust from my parents to be able to trust that I knew where the hell I was going and how to get back. Mm. And once they felt like I could do that, then they're like, cool, all right, have fun. And we would just go. It's interesting. I would struggle to feel that same confidence for my kid. Yeah, I mean, he's only in first grade, so how much can you do in first grade? But
exactly. Yeah, that's such a yes thing.
Yeah, and I don't know. He's kind of a bigger kid, though. And I think that's kind of part of the concern is, like, you know, somebody giving him a hard time or something like that somewhere down the street. Or, you know, there's all these fucking gnarly podcasts about my favorite murder and all these kidnapping. It's just, like, makes my brain hurt. And I'm just like, why are people so fucked up? Why can't we just be good to each other? Jesus Christ.
And I am addicted at the moment to sort of crime podcasts and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, all the documentaries on Netflix, you know, all these serial killers and stuff. My wife doesn't watch any of that.
Sure.
She's like, anything negative, she just won't watch. She's like, well, why would I want to watch that? You know, and I'm like, I just find it interesting. She's like, nope, don't want to know. Do not want to know. And I'm like, oh, geez.
Yeah. I used to watch like Black Mirror and all kinds of weird, crazy shit and listen to like these gnarly, like true crime stories and shit like that. And I just... It's been in like the last 3 or 4 years. I just stopped. I'm just like, what am I doing? Like my head already like exists kind of in a darker place already. And so what am I doing adding more darkness to it?
Yes. Yeah. So, it does make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a question for you regarding getting back into the shop.
Yes.
So you've had these kind of on and off again phases where, you know, like you were doing your knife thing and then the girls were born and it was a break there and then, or things were a little bit slower there. And then the girls started going back to school and you got back into it again. And then Buddy was born. And so things have slowed down again for, like you said, the last 18 months. And now as he gets ready to start school, I can't, you said next year, right?
September come in. So
about a year. Do you see these as cycles or phases of progression, or do you feel like you'll just kind of be picking up where you left off? Do you have some ideas and concepts of things that you want to be doing as you move forward in kind of like I mean, obviously it's a new year and people like to make resolutions and stuff, but for you, and not necessarily are based around the new year, but just like as that is starting to come towards you in the next, whatever, 10 months, 11 months, I guess it's 10 months, to eight, whatever. Like, what are you thinking about that and how do you perceive it? Are you excited about it? Because you also got the music stuff going on, and how do you juggle it with all that?
Well, I'm effectively thinking I'm starting over, really.
Okay.
You know?
So do you feel like you're starting over again?
Yeah, oh, completely.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You don't feel like you're getting back on the bike?
No.
Okay.
You know, if you take sort of 2-3 weeks off, you're getting back on the bike. But when you haven't done anything for months, all that muscle memory is gone, really, you know?
Okay.
And it is. It is completely starting over again. And to the point where we're thinking, you know, talking with my wife, thinking, do we almost like rebrand when I restart, you know? Mm. Well, you know,
okay.
And I'm not even quite sure. What I do know is I will just be doing what I want and then putting them up at the end of each month.
Yeah.
You know, so there's no pressure that way.
Doing like the newsletter drop model.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, no sort of taking orders or pre-sales or all that kind of stuff, because that just adds this crazy pressure, and I'm not good at all with pressure at all. I can bury my head in the sand and I'm the worst.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, but you know, but to do that, you need to have good work out there. So I'm quite aware that it's not as easy just saying, yeah, I'll just make stuff and just sell it at the end of the month. It really isn't going to be that easy. So it's going to be basically starting off again. And I just think, just go, you know, go with what my strengths are, I think. And that, I think that is simplicity. I really do. And just keep things clean and simple and make that be the sort of the brand, really, which really is what Chop is. They're all very sort of simple and sort of clean stuff, because I love doing all the other stuff that comes with it, you know, the photography and making the little videos for each knife and all that kind of thing. I still love doing that, but all that stuff takes so much time, but you know, as you're aware. So I think come the summer now, well, I mean, we're still getting a lot of work done on the house here as well, most of my stuff isn't actually accessible to use at the moment.
I gotcha.
So by the summer, this second barn here that the studio is in, that will, half of that will be a complete workshop setup, ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'll just be a slow start and just getting my hand back in, really. But you know, thankfully, you know, doing this show, you know, it's one of those things. It's almost like becoming like a YouTube maker. You know, learning something from YouTube, because I learn all these tips from people and I hear all these tips, but I'm not putting any of it into practice. It's all just it's all just theory in my head, really.
I got you, yeah.
So who knows, really? But it's effectively going to have to be starting again, really, because it's been so long. Yeah,
I do feel like it seems to me, at least right now, that it makes sense for you to do the newsletter drop model, because you do have so much going on between the band and the family and the house being built and stuff like that, that to manage your own stress in a meaningful way, but by taking away the option for commission work, that's really going to help a lot.
I think it's the only way I could do it, to be honest with you.
Sure,
I really do. Yeah. So you know, it'll be starting slow. You know, it's putting, you know, one or two knives up, and you know, and hopefully they'll go at some point, and then, you know, replenishing them and that, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, something I've always still. You know, there's very little to appreciate about Jeff anymore these days. No, I'm just joking. It sounds really terrible.
He's the bottom of the bottom,
you know,
really.
Something I still appreciate about him, even though everything else has gone to the wayside. Now, I've always admired the collaboration work he's done. Of course, you know, he's worked with several different chefs in the past. And part of that strategy is connecting with somebody who has an audience in a way that can help drum up interest and draw people to you by collaborating with them. And I don't know if you have chefs that you might be able to do something like that with, or even like doing a limited series of knives with like a friend, other knife maker friends of yours, like myself or Jeff or even Fingal, who's close, and doing something like that just to help with kind of boosting that awareness more than anything, that I'm a guy and I make knives, look at me and what I do, kind of thing, you know.
Well, I think I'm very fortunate in the fact that, you know, we've been doing this for so long and we've made all these connections,
right?
And you know, I did a lot of work when I was, you know, when I was doing this full time, you know, making connections with chefs as well.
Right.
And there's, you know, there's a lot of my knives out there in sort of bigger, you know, restaurants. So I think I could easily sort of get back into that. And, you know, I could probably easily arrange some sort of collabs with people as well. But what I've got to be aware of is my work isn't going to be up to standard for some time, I don't think.
Really?
It's like I said, it really is starting over again.
Okay.
So yeah, I'll just take it slow and see what happens and see what opportunities that are available to me then, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think just, I think, you know, top of my head now, thinking what, you know, how will I start? I think just, you know, my sort of standard Western Chef knives, do it, you know, do a few of them. And, I do like these one-off designs that I was doing. They all seem to sell well as well. So I think, yeah, these one-offs, and be sort of creative with that. I've still got lots of stuff here that I, you know, especially handle materials that I bought in, thinking this will be a great sort of one-off.
And, right.
You know, moon rock and all these crazy things I had these crazy ideas for. So, yeah, I've got plenty of stuff here to sort of get creative with. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting. But, yeah, I'm very much aware that I'll be starting off as a newbie again, really. Yeah.
I feel like I could see, because you're right. You have made some good connections with chefs, especially when you're doing the steak knives for a few restaurants and stuff like that. I wonder if you could even do a kind of... And I'm definitely not trying to tell you how to do your work, but collaborate with those specific.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Restaurants, because if they have the ability to afford, you know, handmade knives from somebody, they must have a pretty strong clientele, or repeat clientele. And I wonder if there's a way to do kind of bring home the experience with you kind of series, where you work with them to do a limited series and say you're going to make replicas of the knives that you made for them, or maybe they're special in some way for, say, the upcoming spring. Maybe there's some sort of spring flowers that you laser on, or spring vegetables or something like, or you know, some sort of plant that you laser on as part of a spring series, and then you collaborate with them to connect with their email list or whoever their clientele, and be like, you know, you can take that experience home and have these handmade knives in your own kitchen.
We tried that with a couple of restaurants,
okay,
maybe about two years ago. It didn't really. The issue is there, I think. You know, you'll make, let's say you make 4 dozen steak knives for a restaurant, and they'll say, well, we'll have more and we can then sell them on to the clientele. It's like, okay, well, we'll make another couple of dozen, but you can then sell on as well. The issue then is, you're not doing any sort of selling. It's up to them.
I see.
And they don't give a fuck. They, you know, they're busy running a restaurant. You know, that their server isn't going to say, "Oh, can I interest you in one of these knives?" They're like, they got a dessert to go and get. You know, that's what I found. That didn't really sort of seem to go so well.
Right.
But yeah, I think one-off chef knives, not knives. I think that'll be my sort of route back in.
Right.
What's your plans for the year? Have you got anything? Any big changes you think coming up, or any tweaks to the business sort of where you do things?
Yeah, I think my packaging game is definitely going to be one that I make a priority this year. And I do also want to do more collaboration projects with makers. I did one with my friend Dan Bittinger. When was that? I think it was like March last year. And I was like, this is going to be great. I'll do one like every quarter or maybe once every trimester. I ended up only doing the one because I just couldn't get my shit together. And I think I wasn't really necessarily ready to do it as frequently as I thought I wanted to. But I would like to do that.
How would you decide doing a collab? Who does what? Because I think... your handles, I think, are very distinctive, but everybody seems to be doing them these days anyway. How would you decide, and obviously your Damascus patterns as well. So would you give somebody a blade and they'd finish it? How would you see that?
Yeah, working? It would be like I sent a knife. Actually, Don Wins had a knife blade that I forged a long time ago, and he's been sitting on it for a while. And because I've used his knives. I really like the way he grinds them. So I'm very confident in his ability to finish out the blade. I'm pretty sure I didn't do any grinding on that one. Yeah, I think it was still as heat treated form. So I made the steel, and then I forged the blade, and I pass it on to him to do the blade finishing and then put a handle on, because it's very unique, his style. I think what do we do with Dan? I did the same thing. I forged a blade I made steel, forged a blade, and then sent it to Dan. Again, another maker whose blade geometry I've used and cut with and really like. And so I was like, grind it the way you want to grind it. And then his handle work is really nice. So I look at the making the steel and forging the blade and heat treating the blade as kind of like the first half of the knife making. And then the second half, or maybe almost 2/3 sometimes, depends on the blade, is the blade grinding and the blade finishing, as well as the handle sculpting. And then he actually sent the blade. The way it worked with Dan is that he sent the blade back to me, and fortunately he's not that far from me, so he actually just drove it down to me, and then I finished the blade and handled the packaging and shipping and stuff like that, and running the auction and everything to sell the knife. So there's a little bit of back and forth, kind of. You remember that band, the Postal Service?
No.
I think it's a U.S. band, but they would I think it was the lead singer from Death Cab for Cutie. Are you familiar with that band?
Oh, right. Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
So he worked with an artist over on the... I think he's from the West Coast. And he worked with an artist from the East Coast. And they would send tracks back and forth. And she would do like the beats and the background music. And he would do the song singing and the songwriting and stuff like that. So they called it the Postal Service because they were sending stuff back and forth, I think. I don't know if they had to send it back and forth via snail mail, but I think they did for whatever reason. Maybe just to be able to say they did that.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
Right,
yeah. So it's a lot involved with a collab, really, isn't it?
There is. And it comes down to kind of... I have issues sometimes with trust in a way. I've tried to collab with people so far, and it's really only been Don and Dan so far, but I have a lot of people I'd love to do collaborations with. I think it'd be cool to do like a steak knife set with you. I think that'd be rad. I'm trying to figure out like how do I get metal to you. You'd either have to come to the States and take it home in a bag, or have anybody who's coming to visit. Maybe I send it to Jeff and he goes to Spain, and then you visit him in Spain.
True, yeah.
Weird and, convoluted way of getting it to you.
You know, whilst we're talking about Jeff as well, and we're talking about collabs, Jeff was talking to me this week saying that he'd love to do collabs with our listeners. So I think if anybody wants to do a collab with Jeff, just DM him. He's well up for it. And I think the first probably 20 he'll probably take on. So any of our listeners who want to do a collab with Jeff, just DM him. DM him. It's fine. All good.
Is that real?
You probably read them on the toilet because he's still
stuck there.
Yeah. He's gonna kill me.
He's like, I miss one fucking show and you throw me under the goddamn bus.
Well, listen, Canadians out there, I'm sure you know all about Lawrence for MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. But also the Americans as well. You need to be getting your stuff from him. Everything that we talk about on the show, whether it's Rhino-Et or combat abrasives or, you know, materials, even the tools and forges that we talk about, he sells them all. So head on over, MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. He's a real cool dude. He's matching that combat offer of basically 10% off. If you buy a 10-pack, you'll get 10% off and all that kind of stuff. Go take a look. He's got everything you could possibly need. And apparently, if you're in America, you're still getting stuff very, very quickly from him over the border there. So MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Check him out on Instagram as well and give him a follow because he's always got new lines there and he'll always put them up on Instagram so you know what he's got.
For sure. And I also want to add, right now, he actually has a Black Friday sale going on. Now, we are recording Friday after Thanksgiving, but it does go through Monday, it looks like. So after you listen to this episode, hopefully you're listening to hot off the press on Monday, go over to Maritime Knife Supply where he is, he's got a 10% off Damasteel as well as all handle material. And he also has a 15% off the Baker Forge and Tools Tsunami Steel. So Maritime's got a sale going. Go check it out right now because that's some great savings right there, especially on those high ticket price items. Lawrence is the man.
Go do it. And whilst we're talking about sponsors, probably a good time to talk to you about KnifePrint, KnifePrint.com. So many of you have maybe taken off a little time with the holidays. You may be there with your family itching to get back to work and you know you can't. You could always open up a laptop and design a new knife. KnifePrint.com, it's CAD in the browser. If you've never done any sort of CAD before, which is computer-aided design, it can be really, really daunting and expensive too. But with KnifePrint, you don't need any licensing, any special software. It's all done in the browser. They'll show you exactly how to do it. So you can design knives in your browser. You can save them, pull them up another time, print them off as templates. But they've got a great service where they'll actually cut out the blade for you in any steel that you want. You choose the steel, you choose the thickness, you choose the design that you've made. They'll laser cut it or water jet cut it and ship it straight to you. So if maybe you're toying with a new design, you want to see how it feels in the hand, it's a perfect service, KnifePrint.com. Go take a look.
Ooh.
Okay, so Christmas is nearly here.
Yeah.
It's nearly here. Are you finding you get a lot more inquiries this time of year?
No.
You're like late.
No.
Late in the year. No.
I don't. Well, I mean, I actually, if any time of the year I get a bunch of inquiries, it is towards the end of the year. A lot of people wanting something less in regards to how my knife's work, it feels very last second. So I honestly try to count my year basically done at the end of October and starting it over in November, December, just so that these last couple of months, I'm doing stuff, but it's low-key and there's no pressure because I hate fucking build-up pressure to the end of the year. I did it many, many years. It's only been in the last 2-3 years, maybe 4 years, that I've tried to call my year done in October because it's just a lot on top of all the family stuff going on and holiday shit. So it's just
it's a pressure of a date and that cutoff date,
yeah,
and it has to happen because you know, whether this is for a gift for Christmas or something, you know, there's no wiggle room there. It has to happen. It's
right.
It can be a lot of pressure. Yeah.
I feel like I'm a Scrooge sometimes. But I think I've tried to recognize that it comes from a place of lacking from when I was growing up. But I have a hard time with the whole holidays, especially Christmas and like all the gift giving. And there are a lot of people in the family that we were buying stuff for, and it's, it feels so extraneous. And it's not like it's their birthday. It's just a holiday. And so it adds up to a lot of money too, like hundreds, if not thousands of dollars over across the whole family being spent on all this stuff. And it's just like, what the fuck? And I think the other thing I struggle with is, like, today's Black Friday as we're recording, and in years past, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty of stories of people being really fucking shitty to each other so that they can get things for people that they care about. But in the way, we've made it such a weird and like competition, and you have to make it happen in this very narrow window that people are really gnarly to each other. And it's,
I used to do a thing with Chop, and I obviously haven't done it for the last year or this year. With Black Friday, I take the website down and I just put up a message saying, you probably got too much stuff anyway.
I forgot you used to do that.
Yeah, I'd literally take the site down for the day and just have a message saying, look, just chill out, spend some time with your family.
Yeah.
Don't go crazy. It is mad. It is how people just lose their mind.
They do. And it's unfortunate because, again, it's supposed to be like a holiday of spending time and doing kind things for the people you care about or people in your community. And it becomes this commodified thing where people are really shitty to each other to try to accomplish that kindness. And I think that's what's kind of like the juxtaposition that I really struggle with. I would really like, hopefully, it's especially as my son's starting to get older in the next year or two, to get away with so much of like the gift giving kind of thing, or I want kind of stuff.
Just tell him straight now. Say Santa doesn't exist.
it's all
a con.
Santa fucking hates you. No. Yeah. Oh my God, that would be horrible. That would be so bad.
Imagine.
I mean,
geez,
I'd laugh about it because in my head it seems funny, but it would be so bad. But I would like to do more to like go to a local food bank or try to do things to help. Even just like he has so many toys. It's insane. Mm-hmm. Like he has more toys than some of the toy shops it seems like I go to or any, honestly, any like childcare center or school that I've ever been to. He has more stuff here in our house than they have at any of those places. And I think what would be cool is in a way to kind of slim down as we prepare to get new things is to find things that we can donate either to the local nonprofit or where, like the food bank or whatever, toys that are still useful, but that he's basically is completely grown out of and doesn't play with anymore and has no use for, you know, anymore. Yeah. Let's pass those things on so we can thin the herd and then get maybe a couple new things. Right.
Yeah.
And just try to do things that are more helpful to people at large, because I didn't grow up doing this, but I wish I had. And it's something that weighs on me at this time of year, because it feels so greedy to want a bunch of shit that honestly, like, most of us don't need the stuff that we get at Christmas very rarely.
No, completely.
That's what our fucking birthdays are for. Get the shit you need on your birthday, or just get it for yourself, whatever. Treat yourself, you know, go get some stuff. Yeah. But
we started doing this thing with our family now, so we still buy for our siblings and parents, obviously.
Yeah.
Both Amy and I, but we started just doing a secret Santa list.
Okay.
So the whole family would put their, well, you know how Secret Santa works.
I do.
And so everybody then puts up a list on WhatsApp of possible things that they'd want. And we put up, you know, everybody has a value. So, you know, it's £75 in this case. So you put up a list of things that you could possibly have. And it could be multiple things that add up to that, or it could be, could go over or whatever. And then, so you get that one thing from your Secret Santa that you want. You know, it's not a case of, you know, oh, I've got to get my brother something, you know, and you end up just getting any old shit just because you need to get him something, you know? So this is a good way of, you know, not getting lots of stuff that you don't need. Everybody just gets one gift that they really want. And it really seems to work. And what we do is we put up, like, you know, a few different options. So it's still a surprise when you get it because you weren't quite sure what you were getting as well. And we've done that the last few years now, and it really does work, actually. It's
And so you do that nice. For the adults getting, or all the kids
for,
as well?
For the All the adults, basically. Okay. Yeah, the kids we don't.
I am totally into that. I would rather focus just on one person than trying to get one kind of whatever lame kind of thing for everybody, you know.
So we literally pick a name out of the hat, and all we need to think of for the whole family is, okay, I'm getting four, whether it be my brother. That's, you know, and Amy would get one for another person because each person has one.
Who's your secret Santa this year?
It is my brother. Oh. It is my brother, actually. Yes, and my older brother.
The builder? So, is he a builder?
No.
Carpenter?
No.
You had a brother as a carpenter.
Oh, but yeah, my younger brother is. He does set design, stage designs, that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. No, my older brother, it's quite a strange one. He builds tanks, weirdly. Oh. He basically manages the factory that make tanks.
I gotcha.
And part of the Ministry of Defense and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not 100% sure what he does, but I know he goes into work.
Right.
And they make tanks.
Interesting. So,
especially for me who thinks war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Exactly. Sure. Yeah. But I am looking forward to Christmas this year because we've just come back from the UK. We spent way too much time in the UK. For various family reasons. And we're back now and we know we're here for Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's just us. You know, the house is in a far better state than it has been because we're still getting, you know, we've been getting work done for years. It's just going to be nice to, the kids break up, I think, the day before Christmas Eve. Then they've got 2 weeks off. They're all a nice age now for Christmas where they, you know, they still believe and all the rest of it. So, yeah, really looking forward to this Christmas.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good one. Kid still believes. And I know the day is going to come when somebody either ruins it because we listen to a fucking podcast where they're like, kids, earmuff, Santa doesn't exist.
I think that was the title of one of our podcasts as well.
Oh, man. I know who that guy, who that happened to as well. A buddy of mine.
Oh, jeez. So.
But just trying to like figure out how do you ease that on the kid, or do you like how do you reposition it? So is it like Santa isn't real, but the spirit of Christmas or the holiday season? That's like it's more about that.
Yeah.
How do you?
Because I'm really not religious in any sort of way. So to me, Christmas is just about tradition. It's just, you know, what we did as a tradition as you know, growing up, we weren't religious in any way either. But I do remember the transitional years of, I can't remember how old I would have been. I was probably 14, 15. I was a slow developer.
Okay.
Then when you sort of know, well, it's not real, but I'm just going to go along with this because I'm getting presents everywhere. you know, so I'll just go along with this. It's
keep
fine.
Getting those sweet
it's fine.
Gifts.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this man with the beard, yeah, he's real, right? Yeah.
You're still going to, like, the local mall and sitting on the old man's lap?
Exactly, yeah. Oh, I'm so excited, Mom. I'm so excited.
Yeah, he's probably excited, too.
This old drunk, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
That was my mom.
Oh, my God.
But no, Christmas for me has always just been sort of tradition. We still have all these, you know, these little traditions that we do now. And I'm excited for it. It's gonna be a nice one, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember. I remember when I realized Santa wasn't real. I was asleep, and I saw whatever reason where we were sleeping was like in a shared room, and the door was open, and I could see my parents sneaking by with our stockings, and I was like, "What the fuck?" I mean, little kid brain was like, what is going on? Yeah. And I realized like, oh, Santa isn't real. Okay. Yeah. But I also just went with it. I was like, I never said anything to them. I don't think I ever told my mom that I knew he wasn't real and all that kind of stuff. It was like, once my younger siblings started to come to the realization and I'm like, oh yeah, I knew that. Okay. Moving forward. Now what?
But I tell you what, even now where, you know, I'm in my 40s, I've got an older brother and an older sister who's in her 50s. It wasn't last year, I think it was the year before, we all went back to my parents for Christmas, all of us, the whole family. Okay. And even now we had that tradition of all waking up, standing at the top of my stairs, and my dad going downstairs to see if he'd been. And we're all still playing along with this now. We're in the 40s and 50s. And he shouts up, he's been. And we all go running down the stairs excited.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, it's got to be great for the kids too, though. They must love that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I suppose that's what it's all about. Yeah. But listen, if you're listening to the show and your partner is a knife maker and Christmas is coming and you want to get them something special, don't get them jewellery. Head on over to dharmasteel.se. Get them a beautiful piece of steel that they can make something that they can keep forever. Something very special. They are Dharmasteel AB on Instagram. Go take a look at the kind of stuff people are making. It's always, always special stuff. We just did the Dharmasteel Chef Invitational last week where we got to see some amazing, like really, really special knives, all made of Dharmasteel, which is a stainless Damascus. Very, very easy to work with, which is, I was amazed, all the makers that we spoke to last week who were using Dharmasteel, every one of them said that they were a little bit daunted, but it was actually far easier to use than they thought it would be. But go take a look for yourself, dharmasteel.se. They make some fantastic patterns. Go take a look. If you use Knife Talk at checkout, you'll get 10% off the order too. And they're just great people. They're great people. Now, I say great people. I'm not sure about Pear doing that dancing with the knives that I did online. That sort of stuff. I'm just not into it. Okay. But they're great people. So go take a look. Dharmasteel.se.
Different strokes, man. I was into it. I thought it was cool. I was really impressed by it.
He had a good bod. I was surprised. He had a really good bod.
It was cool. After the show, everything was done. I hung in our booth, and there were actually quite a few people that were hanging in the booth too. And Brigham Kendall jumped in, and he joined me while we listened to Pear and you guys do the awards and all this stuff. And then afterwards, we just picked up and carried on a conversation there, and whoever was willing to jumped in. So Naren came in as well, and Fingal showed up. He came back into our booth and jumped in with us too and chatted for a while. Gabe Fletcher, who won the our pick for the build along competition, he jumped in too. I feel like there was somebody else, and I feel bad if I'm forgetting somebody, but
nice, the after show.
Yeah, and it was cool. It was, and that's like what we just kind of like sat there and BS'd. And Carly jumped in actually for a second too, because at one point I'm like, I'm pretty sure Carly knows that I'm talking right now, and hopefully she can hear me. And she jumped in, and she let us know that we had like the software was just going to keep going for like another 45 minutes. So hung out in there for basically another half hour, almost 45 minutes. I had to bail because we had stuff going on with the family. But I think Fingal ended up staying in there with one of the other makers that was presenting at the show, whose name is escaping me right now. But anyways, it was cool. It was fun to chat with those guys and kind of, I was doing the picture in picture, so I was like kind of doing a little bit of a running commentary while you guys were talking, you and Pear were talking, and then while Pear was doing the presentation and stuff like that. For the awards.
Oh, cool.
Nothing rude. Just
bad chatting. Mouthiness.
Just talking mad shit. No, it was cool. It was fun to do that because I think it's cool to like to have that interaction. And I think I'm very thankful for the Patreon that I have, because it kind of affords that opportunity to like pull people in and chat with them. And I have a Discord that I do with them where I'm chatting with a bunch of the people as well. And so at the end of the Dharmasteel, it kind of creates that opportunity as well to pull some of those people in who wouldn't normally be part of the show. Because honestly, more than anything, like, it's just hard to manage a lot of people talking all at the same time, really, right?
And
we had like six or seven people in the booth at the same time on the screen. Wow. Wow. So
yeah,
we just kind of treat it like a Zoom meeting in a way.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Oh, makes
it was
sense.
Good.
Makes sense. With regards to your Patreon or your Patreon, how can people get involved in that? Is that go to your website?
Yeah, the easiest way to find it, I have a link in my bio on my Instagram at Malwasi Fire Arts on Instagram. And if you just tap the link, it actually goes to my link tree. It's cool. Instagram offers you to put up, I think, three or four links now, but I do still have a link tree that's got like a bunch more links and the Patreon's on there, and that's the easiest way to find it. And you can be part of the community where, you know, I'm doing private Q&As every month, which is a great opportunity for people to basically, you know, you're paying to have me be your knife making coach. They have business coaching and life coaching. So I'm your knife coaching guy, basically. Cool. And so that's a great place for the Q&A. And those are like, there's no limit on time. It's me just talking. Or answering a couple questions, but mostly me talking about a specific subject. And I think I did 3.5 hours one day just talking.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, That was a little long. Because at the time I was done, my voice was super hoarse and my throat was killing me. I was like, maybe I should try to keep it a little bit tighter than that. But they're always really good and cool to...
And can people go back if they were to join
Patreon? Yeah, so those live on the Patreon. Yeah, those live on the Patreon. Okay, they can catch all of the past ones as well as new ones. And then I have my Artisans with Steel podcast that I do, and where I'm interviewing people who have been on the Artisans of in my calendar. And so just having conversations with them, kind of similar to how you first started out Knife Talk, kind of getting their backstories and their influences and inspirations and stuff like that. And talking with them about the way they make knives, and they share some tips and knowledge, and I have plenty of my own questions, because I think it's my own selfish way to ask those makers some questions that I've been wanting to ask them and stuff like that. And it's been good. Cool. I've been doing that for almost a year and a half, almost 2 years now. Yeah. And so there's a lot of interviews up there for people to check out.
Cool.
But yeah.
And Jeff's got his thing as well called From the Crapper. So if you've got any questions for Jeff, DM him, Annie Lancer, because he's stuck on the toilet. He's got nothing else to do. He's stuck on the toilet. This turkey did a number on him. So it's called From the Crapper. Send him any questions, Annie. He'll respond. Oh,
Jesus.
Dirty fingers and all.
Dirty fingers and all. Yeah. That's disgusting. That's so gross. It's weird. I can handle a lot of gross things, but for some reason, like human byproducts really gross me the fuck out.
Don't you want to think of Jeff responding to your messages while he's pushing one out? I mean, some people may be into that. I mean
it's,
you know,
better
but,
than him pulling one out.
You know what? Whilst everybody is selling their wares, I'm going to take 2 minutes through mine. So I've been talking about this music thing for ages on the pod now, and it's been building up to this. So this week we launched our EP. So it's been sort of pre-order until now, but the EP is now available to buy, and it's 4 tracks. And the idea is that this time Friday, so come Friday 7 p.m. UK time, is when they read out the charts.
Like
in America, you have the Billboard charts, and over here we have the official chart, the official UK charts. And the idea is to chart. So if anybody wants to hear these songs, we put one song up on Spotify today.
Oh, nice.
Which is the lead song on the single called Jigga Jig Out. And the video is up on YouTube as well. And the band is called the 355s. But if you want to get hold of the 4 songs, the only way to do that is to buy a physical CD. And I know that a lot of our listeners are there in America. So they may say, well, what's the point? Because in 4 weeks' time, I'll be able to hear all the songs anyway. And I probably won't get the CD in time because of shipping. But if you do want to buy it, it's only $4.99. If you want to send me a screenshot of the purchase, I'll just email across the files. You can have all the songs. And you can listen to them in your car, on your phone, your laptop, wherever it is. But basically, every purchase goes towards our chart position. And I've seen...
And that starts today.
That starts the day. Okay. Yeah. So basically the chart is every Friday.
Right.
Okay. So come midnight on Thursday, all the sales are then totted up, and then they come out with a chart. So next Friday is when we'll get our chart position. So last year with my solo stuff, I got to number 15 in the charts. But this time as a band, I mean, the songs are far, far better to start with. But we're hoping to beat that and possibly get a top 10. And just to be in the chart the same time as the Beatles, because obviously the Beatles are currently top of the charts here, would just be like the maddest thing ever.
Yeah.
You know, and we're in with a shot. Having seen some figures this morning, because you can get data from the child company. We're in with a shot. We're in with a shot of being top 10. So,
all right.
So, yeah, every single sort of purchase does matter. So if this podcast means anything to you, if you've taken anything from this podcast over the, what, 4 or 5 years we've done it, $4.99 would be such a lovely thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm not asking for $4.99. I'm asking you to buy something that you'll enjoy anyway. Honestly, the four songs, they're very different. They're very sort of diverse in style. But I honestly believe they're great songs. So, yeah, I'm not asking for something for nothing. You're going to get something great in return, I promise.
You know what I did last year? And I advise everybody to do the same, because $4.99 is very reasonable. Is I bought them and then they showed up in time. Like, if you get them now, they hopefully will show up in time that you can put them into your Christmas gifts. Give them to your family and friends. And that's what I did last year. I think I got 7 or 8 of them
to
send out to people. Yeah.
And they fix wonky tables. If you've got a wonky table, you can put one under. Frisbees. They're multi-use.
Anybody like to shoot shotguns, you just throw it up in the air.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, a lot of people don't have CD players anymore. And the amount of people I've had contact me saying, I've bought one, you know, to support, but I've got nothing to play it on. So that's why I'm then just emailing the files so they can put it into their Spotify.
I want the vinyl.
Listen on.
When are you going to pump out the vinyls?
Well, the problem with vinyl is there's like a 6-month turnaround time for vinyl.
Because you got to make the press and everything.
The demand is crazy, and there's only one press left in the whole of Europe.
Holy shit,
and they're trying to build more. Because, you know, in the sort of 90s, they just got rid of them all. CDs were king, and they got rid of all the vinyl presses.
Oh, my God.
Because they were so expensive. Mm-hmm. And now vinyl is such a big thing again, and every band is trying to get vinyl out there. And the wait time to get stuff pressed is crazy. And they're talking minimum orders now of like 5,000-6,000 to start
shit.
As well. Because they can pick and choose the jobs that they want. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is crazy. So it is a dream that one day we'll have vinyl, but at the moment, with regards to physical stuff, it is CDs. But I say, if you don't have a CD, just send me a screenshot of that purchase, and I'll send you the files anyway, and you can listen to them then in your car, on your phone, on your computer, wherever it may be.
We got it. Oh,
The 355s.com is the website. So yeah, 355, the numbers, with an S.com. And there's a big link there. Yeah, I'd really appreciate it if anybody did. And hopefully when I speak to you this time next week, we'll be, you know, in the charts, which would be pretty cool. With the Beatles. I mean, that is, yeah, bonkers. Absolutely bonkers.
I look forward to it. Well, I'm going to get on it for sure today to add to those numbers. We actually just got, what is it, in the last year, we got this little unit that plays vinyl and tapes and CDs. And it's Bluetooth. You can connect your Bluetooth to it. So you can play Bluetooth through it as well. It's a sweet unit. And we actually have a surprising number of cassette tapes. Both my wife and I have a collection of them.
They're making a huge resurgence again. Tapes.
Yeah.
Like the amount of bands who are releasing stuff on tape again. Whereas 5 years ago, nobody. Right. Nobody at all. And you probably wouldn't be able to get them, you know, cut to tape anywhere. But yeah, a lot of people are doing that again now.
It's, I think there's some nostalgia because, like, how things go in cycles. And so, you know, you see all these remakes of, like, Karate Kid and all this other shit that was happening in, like, the 80s and the early 90s. And that's coming back again. Like, the way the high schoolers are dressing nowadays in my area are, like, fucking stonewashed jeans and, like, oversized sweatshirts, like, bum athletics and all that kind of shit and Keds.
It's
so fucking funny. But there is something to that whole experience of playing a cassette, and like people had a sense of pride if they you know they know a tape well enough that they know if they count to like 3.5, it's gonna skip the song to go to the next song and all that kind of stuff.
It's the ownership as well. So I remember, you know, as a teenager, having like a collection of my favorite music. You know, you'd save up, and you on the weekend you may be able to get, you know, a CD, and you'd have to pick very carefully what it was because that's all you could afford. But now, because everything is just so disposable, and you've got everything at your fingertips, it just seems valueless now. You know, so I think people are craving that. Taking ownership of something again.
Sure.
But there's also like the other parts that come to it. So when you know, if you've got something on your phone, you see this tiny little thumbnail of artwork, and that's all you've got. But if you're buying, you know, physical media, you know, songs in a physical form, you know, you're getting the full artwork and you're getting, you know, see who produced it and who played trumpet on track three and all these things, you know. Whereas a kid, I was super geeky about all that kind of stuff, where it was recorded and, you know, hearing more of a story about it. And we've really gone to town on this. So the guy who did our artwork did all the famous sort of Britpop stuff back in the night. So all the Oasis covers, the Verve stuff, the Stone Roses stuff. So a guy called Brian Cannon, a company called Microdot. So we managed to work with him. So, you know, we were really pleased with that. And, you know, we put a lot of thought into, you know, the design of that, because you just don't see, you know, Spotify, you get this tiny little, you know, thumbnail, and it's just like, it's just a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can see why people are wanting to buy physical media again, because it is taking that ownership. But I mean, I use Spotify every day. You know, always on Spotify because it's just so convenient and having everything there. And you know, for what, $9.99 a month, it's amazing.
Well, and really, there's just like this amazing. With things so easily accessible, there is a novelty to that kind of tactile experience versus just pushing a couple buttons. You know, getting the tape in there and making sure you're playing it on the right side. And like, I just found actually a sports Walkman. It was like this newer version of Walkman at a free pile that was like on the side of the road, and it's in great condition. It's like practically brand new. I looked it up on eBay. These same fucking things are selling for $500. They're so expensive. And so,
was this the Sony Walkman, the yellow sports one? I know the one you mean. Yeah,
so I have one of those, and it's got like the fancy, like you can switch directions that you're playing to play the other side of the tape without pulling this tape out and flipping it around. It's got the radio. It's got all this other kind of bass and equalizer shit on the side of it and stuff. But it's super cool. I got it for the kid because we have all these tapes and I want him to like be into like finding tapes and music at the Goodwill or at the music shops. You know, we have a vinyl store downtown that still sells tapes and vinyls along with CDs, and
it's amazing.
And he loves that kind of tactility. It's so novel and interesting to him. And so now he's got $500 fucking Walkman that he can use to listen to these shitty old tapes.
Amazing. Amazing. And it's the whole mechanical nature of it as well, isn't it? You know, you press play, you press it down hard, you can feel the head moving down, and it's pretty cool. And even the smell of it then, you know, if it's an old one, it's gonna
right, for sure,
you know, there's that almost burning smell of everything, and everything's just more visceral, you know. It's it is amazing.
I used to love just watching the mechanics actually work through I would push the play button and then I would try to watch it through the tape if the tape was clear to see how everything like works in there, because it kind of feels like magic, you know.
The ribbon's just rubbing against
this like weird Scotch-Brite looking piece of cotton, and it's like vibrating and making music. It's like, what the fuck? Who the hell thought they were going to put a Q-tip on a piece of ribbon and it was going to work?
Exactly. And it goes further than that as well, because I think it's like most of the speakers I've got in this house, they're like little Alexa things.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And then, you know, it's one speaker. But I remember, like, growing up, we'd have like a hi-fi system with big, big, beautiful speakers. Right. And the sound would be amazing. Mm-hmm. So, like, now we go to the studio and we record all these songs on, you know, on these amazing, you know, systems, huge monitors that we can hear things from, and it sounds great. Right. And you come back and you listen to things on, like, a little 3-inch speaker, and it's just like, we've definitely taken a step backwards with regards to
so interesting.
Quality that we're listening to stuff in.
Right. And it makes me wonder, like, does it make sense to edit music? So, or adjust and make those adjustments when you're editing in the studio so that it sounds good
well, you do,
to
Matt,
come through
you
those
do.
Speakers.
So one of the processes, once you've recorded, you then get stuff mixed, then it goes to another process called mastering.
Yeah.
And what that do, that's just trying to sort of tune that music to suit as many people as possible. And I think, you know, speaking to some mastering engineers, over the last sort of 15 years, they're not necessarily mastering to get the most out of the sound. They're more trying to sort of squash it a bit, squash those frequencies, just so they know it'll work on a shitty car stereo or on a shitty little mono Alexa device, you know?
Right.
And it is such a shame because, you know, I'm here sitting in my studio and I've got lovely big speakers here and everything sounds great here. But then going back out into the house and using one of these, you know, especially like in the bathroom or, you know.
The little portable speaker, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh shit, yeah, sounds terrible, you know. But
God, that's crazy. I never would have even thought about progress, taking that into consideration. I mean, it's good, yes, though, that somebody's doing that, because, yeah, like you're saying, you can edit it or you know, master it and put it through that process as much as you want. So it sounds great through these beautiful systems. But then somebody plays it through, you know, their Bluetooth speaker that they carry around with them on their fucking wrist. I have a friend that goes for walks and she just carries the Bluetooth speaker with her. It's not going to sound the same. Yeah. And if it sounds shit through that, they're not going to want to listen to it. Exactly, oh God, yeah. That's so.
But
weird.
We're just talking like old men now, because I'm sure back in
these
60s,
damn kids,
the Beatles
don't know what they
stuff,
got.
Exactly, yeah. You know, the Beatles were doing stuff in stereo then. They're just like, why would you want to do that? You know, and yeah, it was just times change. But I honestly do think that we've taken a step backwards. But yeah, hey,
there are some.
Right. You need to tell everybody about your grinder. And how they are the future.
They are the future. I have a Broadbeck Ironworks. Wait, Ironworks? Broadbeck Iron? Is that their name? Jesus, oh my God.
It is, yeah.
I'm totally like, I think I needed another cup of coffee this morning. Broadbeck Ironworks, knife makers, designing and building grinders for knife makers. To me, they're like the one machine that gets it all done. They have all these different attachments that allow you to do various processes, from using a buffing arm to a disc grinder to a belt grinder. They sell radius platens. They have surface grinders. It really is a solution for having multiple machines in one, especially if you're tight on space in your shop. And when you go to broadbeckironworks.com, they will save you 10%. Is that right, Craig, if you put Knife Talk 10 in at checkout?
It is, yes.
And I think they have some Black Friday action going on right now, but I was just actually looking on their Instagram and I didn't see what it was. And I can't seem to find that email that had that information. I don't think Ben sent it my way. And I don't know if you have.
I mean, they've always got deals on the go.
They
anyway,
do. And so
it's always worth checking out their socials. Not just for the deals, but also for the new stuff, because they've also got new stuff too. So yeah, make sure you are following them on Instagram and Facebook and all that.
Absolutely.
Okay, I think we can call that a day. We haven't answered a single question, but I quite like that.
Good.
It's quite nice to spend some time with you without that other idiot shouting over my shoulder. You know.
You know. I mean, he's all right.
He's all right. I mean. He's currently using Indasa 2000 grit on his ass at the moment. just trying to get the.
He's polishing the poodle.
No. He is. But I'm sure Jeff will be back next week. Lost a bit of weight and maybe looking a bit more gaunt. He will be back. But yeah, thank you all for listening, and we hope you've all had a great holiday. And we shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.